Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual sees.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Survivor Stockwatch podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and I am here today joined by, I called her one of the queens of Big Brother 23 in both senses. It's Claire. How you doing, Claire?
Hey, Aaron. I am doing really well. I'm so excited to talk to you. This was such a whirlwind of an episode. So I'm excited to get into it and rate some of these players like I was rated all summer long. So the tables have turned.
Yes, Claire just came off of a Big Brother season where we were rating her. And now, and I got to say, I think, you know, a testament to your mental fortitude that you are already like into Survivor and ready to talk about it. I think a lot of people come off of the show and they're like, oh boy, I gotta, and you know, no judgment whatsoever. Like, it takes a lot to recover sometimes.
Yes, I think that it says something probably to a lot of the cast because I know that a few of us are actually watching it. And I think it's a testament to this season's cast of Big Brother are just big game players. So I, of course, have Derek watching with me. I know Brittany watches. And Tiffany and Chada are both hopping into watching Survivor this summer as well, plus maybe a few others. So I know, I think I'm the driving force maybe a little bit behind the Survivor love. But I love the show and I'm excited.
Is it easier, you think, because it's not exactly the same show? It's kind of like adjacent.
Yes, I think Celebrity Big Brother, the thought of it, watching it, makes me a little queasy. But Survivor's enough that you're just kind of getting glimpses of everything that's happening. The thought of watching live feeds again is overwhelming, having lived it. But Survivor's, you know, it's Big Brother on an island, but it's also so, so much more. So it really feels like a very different show, although there are a lot of parallels between it.
And you've always been like a big Survivor fan, right? Like even far before you went on Big Brother and everything.
Oh, yeah. I've been a Survivor fan for longer than I was a Big Brother fan. I think it's one of my earliest memories was scooping Folly in the Fire. And so I've been watching it since way back then. I stopped watching a little bit in the dark ages. And then I picked back up in Karamoa and I've watched ever since. But I'm a Survivor super, super duper fan as much as I'm a Big Brother super fan.
Yes. And I believe you also you participated. You played in a I don't even know what you would call it, like a homemade version.
Yeah. So me and one guy, we created Survivor Michigan, which is a college run. You people might have heard of Survivor Maryland. It's a college run semester long game of Survivor where we cast normal students. And over the course of 3 months, they vote each other out. It's actually on YouTube. I will plug it. It's pretty good. I think I worked on the first season and then I graduated, but they've kept it running and it is really, really good. It's actually some of my favorite Survivor comes from College Survivors. Just interesting dynamics there. But yes, when I say I'm a super fan of Survivor, I really am. And I've done a few other ORGs as well, Survivor related ones. So I've been playing the game before I even played the game of Big Brother.
Yes. Well, as a showrunner of Survivor, your own Survivor, were you ever tempted to include a billion different advantages and twists?
I think if you watch the first season of Survivor Michigan, the temptation is really there, and we did lean into it a lot. There were a lot of twists, a lot of hidden idols. It just does add something fun. Granted, we were kind of making up these twists as we were going, because we really didn't have that much planning. We're college students. We were taking midterms. So there are a few more twists, though, in this season. They have a long time to prepare, way more than we did. But we didn't have this many. We had some merge twists.
Yeah. You went to Mergatory?
Yes. I think we did have a Mergatory, but a little bit different. I'm not stuck there with them.
My first criticism of this episode is that it's not called Mergatory. I think that's such a missed opportunity. I think that, what did they call it? They called it Ready to Play Like the Lion, which mm-hmm. I did love that line from Erica, but it was also like the second time she said it. Didn't she say it in two episodes ago? In the same episode where they named it They Hate Me Because They Ain't Me, which is also a fine line. But like a repeat line, this was literally the Mergatory episode. It's actually descriptive of what happened.
Yeah. And it kind of feels like we're in Mergatory because no one left and we're just sitting here like, okay, well, this is maybe we don't even know who's at risk next week. There are so many things up in the air. It's we're truly just sitting and waiting like they are out there.
Mm hmm. Well, let's talk about the episode. We're going to go through the episode and talk about sort of like what we saw. And then we'll get into rating the players based on how well they're doing. There's been a big shift in the game, but we still don't know exactly where that's going to land. So just a brief sort of spoiler alert for my ratings. They're pretty, I don't know. They're pretty like, maybe.
Yes, I found mine to be pretty condensed, and then I also think I might have some wild takes in there, based off of gut feeling a little bit and trying to pick up little. Oh, these people were talking in the back, but who knows? I'm glad that no one's actually betting on this.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the episode here. We start here with Uwa having come back from voting out Jeannie, and immediately there's drama here between Ricard and Shan after this vote out. And Shan tells us that, and this is, again, she is reinforcing the sort of the narrative that was put forth in the previous episode, that Ricard is the one orchestrating the moves and she's the one executing the moves. She says to us that she does feel like she needs Ricard to pull her back to the game side of things sometimes because her heart gets in the way. And that does really line up with, I think, how she's been portrayed throughout the season, where she's consistently talking about her emotional connection to the people that she is linked to, and that she does have trouble, cutting them when the time comes. She still makes the decision. She is an assassin. But it does seem like they're trying to tell us something here about Shan and Ricard and the relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, this was really interesting to me, both how Shan was saying, I did this for you, I protected you in all of these situations. And then also her, being the executor and her really wrestling of the emotion versus logic. I mean, I know this is something I really struggled with in the game as well. I think a lot of fans going out there expect that they can just be the assassin, be the mafia pastor. And then you go out and you form real bonds with people, and figuring out what is actually best, the best move, becomes obscured because you have to start thinking, how emotional is this other person I'm working with? Will they be loyal because of these emotions or will they not? I'm glad that Shan has Ricard to kind of pull her back into the logic side of what is the best game. Not that I don't think Shan would be able to get there herself, but it does make me a little nervous for Shan moving forward, just because we saw Ricard and her get into it so much that I'm worried that there might be a little division there and she might be losing some of that logic, pulling her back into it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, on a tribe where Shan basically had like almost the entire cast thinking that she was their number one, being super loyal to her, it seems as though ultimately she comes out of this tribe with the one person who seems to be kind of upset with her now, which doesn't seem super great.
Yeah, it feels like, okay, maybe you should have kept Jeannie and she would have just ridden with you and it would have been fine. You would have maybe lost the extra vote. But at this point, it feels like so many people have extra votes. We haven't really seen them come into play. I think I would have rather had someone that I was 100% solid with going into the merge, just having that extra number. Then it doesn't feel like this is going to be a Denise and Malcolm situation going into the merge. It feels like they might turn on each other, and that definitely feels like how they were setting it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I will say that in the previous episode, I felt like Ricard made the right call. I felt like Shan should not have asked for the extra vote because that's just way too sketchy, and that Ricard was right to hold on to it because giving it away really would have given her even less incentive to keep him around when maybe she shouldn't have even kept him around. So I was on board with him there. However, this episode, I felt like for me, things flipped. And I felt like now that you have survived, Ricard, it's time to drop it. Like in my opinion, so Ricard is going to basically be like, hey, why did you do that? Why did you ask for this extra vote? And like, I don't know, like, how do I feel about this now? This is an argument that lasts into the night. They talk about it the following day and it's still going on and she's asking for it back. And he's like, do you want it though? And it's clear that he doesn't really want to give it back and that he feels like he's kind of owed something. And he kind of resents the fact that she has a bunch of advantages and idols. But from my perspective here, I feel like Ricard has two choices. Either he decides, I want to keep this extra vote. It's worth damaging my relationship with Shan. I want to keep this extra vote and I'm going to make a big deal of this and I'm going to hold on to it because I deserve it and we should split these things equally. Or he should give it back to her and be like, I'm really sorry I didn't give it back to you before, but I really hope that we can work together moving forward and like try to cause as little disturbance in their relationship as possible. I feel like the worst of both worlds is making a huge deal of it and also giving it back.
Yep, absolutely. You need to stick one path, cut the line, say, I'm going to have this extra vote. You better watch out. Or my deepest apologies, please forgive me. Like, we do have trust between us. This has solidified it. Let's move forward as a unit. But like, and even the first night, that night coming back, it's intense. I would understand you're maybe a little emotional. But going into the next day and even being a little snippy with each other of, you know, Shan saying, the next one we find, you can have it. And he's like, well, thanks for giving me permission, Mom.
I've got the clip.
Next advantage we find, next idol we find, is yours.
Thank you for giving me permission to have it.
Like, that's just not good. That doesn't give you like, oh yes, we're unified, we're one, we're together. It feels like as soon as we have the opportunity to, we might turn on each other. And Shan was obviously rubbed the wrong way. Ricard was really rubbed the wrong way. I think both of them really see themselves as huge game players. rightfully, I think they're both playing and navigating this game very well. But I think that maybe a little bit of their egos are bumping up against each other of who's really looking out for who here, who's really protecting who. Neither of them wants to feel like they are the more submissive one out of the two. And so I'm interested to see how this moves forward, how this storyline kind of progresses.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that, again, like, we have this narrative of who's done what, who orchestrated, who executed. We usually don't get that kind of distinction, especially so early on. The fact that we have such a clear distinction tells me that it's something that at least one of them cares a lot about, probably both of them. But it seems very clear to me that Rickard, who did seem to lean pretty heavily on Shan for her social connections in the tribe, is feeling like she's also got all these advantages and idols. And I feel like I need something here. I need some kind of credibility, some kind of credit, maybe some kind of power. Maybe I deserve that. But I feel like he's going halfway and it's leading to these awkward moments. This is when he gives her the vote back.
I want to go into the merge without me feeling like Rickard gave me his word and then he didn't. I don't want that in my mind. I don't want that in my mind at all.
Then put it out of your mind.
I'm going to when you give me the advantage back.
Then fine.
Okay, it's out of my mind.
I still think it's questionable on your part.
It's just like, it's so when you give somebody an advantage, whether you're giving it that you're giving it to them, giving it back to them, or you're giving it to them out of, you know, whatever, like, that's a great moment for you. It's, hey, I'm giving this back to you. I'm fulfilling the trust you put in me, or I'm giving this to you because I trust you. It should be something that garners more trust, rather than something that's like, then fine. I just don't feel good about this. Like, no, you're the one giving something up. You should be making me feel good about it.
This wasn't ever yours. You never really had the ownership. And he was even saying this with the hidden immunity. He was like, we found that together. Like, I could have opened it. And she's like, well, why didn't you then? Why didn't you just open it? There's, I think, a lot of friction with these advantages now. And I wish that we'd seen more of their relationship after we got to the mergatory. I feel like we didn't see Rickard really at all, other than this initial scene and then at the challenge itself. We never really saw how is he fitting in, how are him and Shan now.
Yeah, we saw very little, unfortunately. Shan does have a great line about Rickard.
I trust him ish.
Ish. Trust him ish. I feel like that's got to be a new terminology that we add into the lexicon here.
Yeah, I don't know what that quite is, especially when we've seen that she is so tight with Liana. I'm sure that they're really comparing. She's comparing those relationships, and someone that you trust ish, you're going to be way more likely to cut than someone you just trust. Period.
Yes. So we then head over to Yasa, and they get their mergatory note, essentially. We've had this weird sort of dynamic here at Yasa, basically ever since their second tribal where they voted out Voce. There's been a lot of Liana feeling like they made a mistake to not vote out Xander, Liana feeling like she wants to take out Xander, Tiffany having some friction with Xander, but then also this other side of things where they're finding baby turtles and their secret scenes of them like having fun together. And so Xander says, I feel locked in with my tribe. I feel like we're a great group. We're really tight. But then Liana comes in and contradicts it and says the women are really tight, which is good to know because I was wondering where Evie stood after the previous episode where Tiffany and Liana both seemed to be a little wary of Evie's relationship with Xander, but she is not tight with Xander. She says he's overconfident. His faith in the group is unfounded. And she says, I'm chomping at the bit to flip the narrative. So this is interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is really, really interesting to me. It's also, I'm just going to take a step back. It's wild to me, the timeline of this show. Like Xander says, we were established day five. And it's like, okay, this is day 12. Me just looking at myself in the Big Brother house, like Frenchie was still in the house at this point. Like we had just competed the fun tan lotion veto. Like nothing had really happened. It's just wild how fast paced this is, but also how little time there is to really build these deep bonds. I think it just kind of explains why Survivor, you just flip on people so much quicker than in Big Brother. But that's really an aside. This poor Xander, I feel bad for him. I mean, he doesn't have anyone else, you know. Liana's saying this is unfounded. He doesn't have anyone else to turn to. He probably feels like he is tighter with Evie, based off of past interactions that we've seen with him. I'm curious to see where Xander goes with this. How tight does he really feel like he is with the four? But yeah, I think he is kind of blindly going loyal. Like I'll be the pack mule here. Let me get after challenges and we'll just stick together. Because that's all he has. That's all you can lean on, but he's going to have some new options very soon.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting as well, because I feel like Liana seems according to the edit, Liana has this sort of, it seems like it's very targeted toward Xander. Like she really doesn't seem to like Xander. She really wants Xander out, which is a little bit confusing because especially in a situation where they're heading toward a potential merge, it's kind of like, why would she still be so focused on Xander? And it's hard for me to tell how much of this is being cooked up in the edit and how much of it is real, because I talked last week about how Liana getting this advantage, this power where she is able to steal an idol. It's in the edit, it's kind of being made out to be, oh, that's bad for Xander. She's going to steal Xander's. But in reality, it's like, obviously, she would steal Nasir's. Mm-hmm. She's not going to steal Shan's. There's no reason for her to steal Xander, who thinks that she's on his team. She'd steal Nasir's, who she has no relationship with. But again, the edit is pointing towards Xander. Then in this episode, a little bit later, the first person she names as somebody that she would steal the idol from is Nasir. Mm-hmm. Even though the edit is still like, but Xander. Yeah. So that tells me that like she probably is thinking a lot more strategically than the edit is leading on, that there's probably some kind of showdown or something with Xander eventually that makes it more compelling for her to have been so focused on Xander for so long. But it wouldn't surprise me because my reaction to Liana saying all of this stuff about Xander, I'm like, why do you care so much about Xander? But yeah. I feel like it's probably just the edit, but that could just be my read on it.
No, I think that now watching these shows is really interesting to me because I can sort of see what questions are they asking in confessionals to kind of generate these responses. Not that these are lies, but something like, well, who do you think's on the bottom of the four, or who would you target in the four first to really get that reaction? I like it because we can see, okay, the three girls are clearly tighter than Xander. But you're right. When she was talking down the road about who would she target, she was always throwing out that she would steal Nasir's vote, and other people would bring up, oh, but also Xander. Xander's an option. But she never really stood on that. It makes sense, especially going in forward to continue to work with Xander. And I do see some kind of showdown there, some sort of potential men versus women down the line. And then where does Xander's loyalty lie? That might be interesting. But I do like that Liana is thinking strategically here. She's thinking, who would I cut in certain scenarios? She's not just riding blindly, loyally.
Yeah. And I also think that her word choice here is interesting to me, where she says in this initial confessional, she's chomping at the bit to flip the narrative, not to flip the vote mm-hmm. or to flip against Xander necessarily. But we do know that in the first second episode, so it's about Yasa and going to tribal. There was a lot of talk about how the men tend to get credit for moves. And it seems like, you know, Xander with a couple of, other than idol and an advantage and just being Xander, doing well in challenges, probably looks on the outside like he would end up getting more credit. And I wonder if part of this as well is not necessarily targeted specifically at getting Xander out of the game or anything like that, but more so like I need to make sure that the narrative is that I am the one who knocks here. like I'm the one running things.
Yeah. And I think that in so many of these shows, perception becomes reality, right? And so we talk, like you said, like Evie really mentioned her wariness of working with men, because at the end they would normally get the credit, and just the hesitation there of who's deserving, who's actually pulling the moves. It's interesting. We're seeing this too with Shannon Ricard, who's actually doing the moves, who's actually controlling the game. Anytime you have idols or advantages, you can so clearly demonstrate that you have sway, that you have power. And I can't see a scenario potentially if Liana doesn't use her advantage this week, potentially down the road, she might steal Xander's just to take that power away from him and really have control over that idol.
Yeah. Well, we head over to Luvu. Where Sydney tells us that, okay, we might be heading into a merge, but that does not necessarily mean that we are in the advantaged position, because we've never been able to solidify our alliances. Nasir has an opposing view. He wants to stay tribe strong. He says this is an easy final six. He says this to them at camp. He doesn't reiterate it to us, but this does fall in line with what we expected from Nasir in terms of tribe loyalty. Deshaun has his own perspective. He says this tribe is shattered, that he wants to keep the tribe together for at least one vote. And if they don't, they're screwed. And he says as much at camp as well. So he says it at camp. He says, we need to stick together for at least one or two votes, which is an interesting thing to say publicly. And he also tells us in confessional, he really wants the tribe to stick together for at least one vote, because if they don't, they're screwed. Now, this is the first of, maybe not the first, but one of many things that was very confusing in this episode, because Deshaun says this twice in succession, and then we never really hear from Deshaun again about what his plans are once the merge hits. Instead, we hear from Danny, who seems to have a very different perspective on where they should go at the merge.
Yes, this made me nervous for Deshaun. I've really been liking him most of this season. I feel like he's been laying low, playing a good game, positioning himself well. I feel like he's still pretty well positioned. But the fact that he publicly said this, I'd love to hear what Nasir thought about this, or even, you know, God forbid we hear from Heather, but what Heather thinks about this, or Erica thinks about this, or anyone who isn't in this kind of tight three that we've seen of Danny, Deshaun, and Sydney. But I was surprised of his strong verbiage of shattered. That just seems like this will be in shambles. I do feel like Aluvu will be leaving. That does feel like what we've been seeing. I feel very bad for Nasir, who is really trying to hype everyone up and get the gang together, and was trying to talk about, we should all be so proud. We've won so many competitions. Let's just stick us six strong, continue it on. I'm curious why they're so eager to turn on each other. It does kind of make sense for the first few votes, especially if they just think they're going into a normal merge. But I do think that Erica likely knows she's on the bottom. Heather probably knows she's on the bottom. Who really knows what she's thinking, though? But it's messy. It's messy, messy, messy.
It really is. And it's a really tough one. And I'm sure I'm going to mention this many times throughout the podcast. It's a really tough one to talk about and analyze, because it really does feel like we have half an episode. So it's like the episode stopped in the middle and we're like, okay, so here's what all of this means. I don't know.
Yeah. And I'm forgetting right now, and I rewatched and I was trying to pay attention. Jeff said when he pulled it aside that this was going to be a two-part episode, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So they knew beforehand. So it's not like, oh, there will be so many twists, so many unpredictable moments in the second half that they had to give us an extra hour. It was always going to be pre-planned. So that's just something that's interesting.
Yeah, this is when Jeff talks to us and he says, here we go.
This is what we're gonna do. This is gonna be so wild that it's gonna need two episodes, and we're no tribal tonight. They're gonna compete in teams, and one person's gonna be left behind. Hey, this is gonna ruffle some feathers, and it's like, Jeff, get it right. It's rustle feathers.
Yeah.
But Jeff is excitedly explaining this to us. Which, as I think you correctly point out, this means that this was planned from the start to be a cliffhanger episode, which all hinges on whether or not Eric is going to smash the hourglass, which we will get into. But it tells us right from the start, knowing now what we know of the end of this episode, that this was poorly planned out from the start.
Yeah, it's you know, also I really love though when Jeff was talking, you could see the people, the other tribes walking in. I'm like, Jeff, talk quieter. Like, they're going to hear you. Like, they're eavesdropping. They can see you. Like, be cool. Come on, quick, Jeff, please deliver these lines. Just kind of interesting that they wanted this to so clearly be a huge game changing, a big switch. It does feel like it's, there just are a lot of twists this season. I know that's something that everyone has been saying. I've been enjoying a lot of the twists. I'm also of the camp. I think this is a fantastic cast, probably one of the better casts that we've had in a really, really long time. And you don't need it. One tribe is shattered. Yasa's, you know, ready, chomping at the bit to change the narrative. Uwa only has two people. This was going to be chaos no matter who, if there is this twist or not, no matter what half this, the blue or yellow team are safe. This would have been a monumental merge no matter what.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like, you know, just zooming out a little bit to the narrative of the whole season. It had just two amazing episodes back to back, in my opinion. I also loved the premiere. But it really has felt like we're getting whipped around, like we're Britney in the veto competition she won. Great premiere. Not great second episode, followed by another not great third episode, then two great episodes, and then back to like, oh. And so it's like, it's been half and half. I mean, it's been three great episodes and three kind of like meh episodes. And unfortunately, I think the meh is sort of outweighing the great stuff, in terms of, how people are perceiving the season so far. Like, I feel like people were just coming out. After two episodes, people were just being like, maybe we can be hopeful. Like maybe we can trust them. And then this episode hit and they were like, nope, that's it. Nope. We're not going to trust them this season. Like, it's going to take a lot of really good episodes in a row, I think, to win back the goodwill of the audience at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of this looks good on paper, right? A lot of these twists, this merge idea, it's interesting on paper. It's choices you're making. Choices are interesting. But when it's happening, I have a diagram on my, you know, computer of, okay, this is who is safe. This isn't who isn't. That's complicated. What tribes are all these people coming in on? Who has extra votes? Who has these advantages? Who knows about what? It's very complex. And I'm a super fan. I'm tracking all of it. But I imagine for a lot of people who aren't as big of fans, it is just a whirlwind. And I mean, there are just so many scenarios that might happen after, which we'll get into, of who's up for, I'm in Big Brother, so I'm like, who's up for eviction?
Well, they don't have a good word for it. It's like vulnerable or safe, which isn't great.
No, yeah, who's vulnerable and who out of those is going to be the biggest target? It's very complex. I wish they did have a little diagram on the side of vulnerable, safe, and so on. But someone needs to make alliance charts like they do for Big Brother.
Yeah, I mean, I watch live on Twitch, and I tend to talk the most during commercial breaks to sort of like break down what we saw during the segments. And I felt like there was, in this episode, there was never enough time to even talk through what was happening. I was trying to, after the commercial break for this, where Jeff explained what was going to happen, I was trying to recap what this twist was. And I couldn't even like summarize it for my audience before the next before the commercial break ended. Like, I can't imagine, because and it was also due, like, I was describing it, but I couldn't do it with any sort of like this makes a lot of sense and this is what to expect or anything like that. It was kind of just like, well, this is what we think right now, but we're just gonna really have to shut up and keep watching, I guess, to figure out exactly what this is gonna be. And I feel like it never gets to the point where I'm like, okay, that's what it is now, because the episode ended before it even got there. So it like the whole episode just put us in this mergatory situation where we're just kind of like, is it even worth analyzing yet? Because we need to wait for the ultimate outcome of this randomness.
Yep. I had the exact same experience last night. I watched with a few different people and I was trying to explain to it. They were trying to explain it back to me. And I don't think, like I watched with Derek and he didn't know until today, like a couple of hours ago when I was talking him through again, Erica potentially smashing, spoilers, I don't know, Erica smashing this timekeeper, hourglass. There we go. smashing this hourglass, that if she doesn't smash it, she's vulnerable, that she's still up in the air. And I'm even now just saying that I was only 80% confident that that is the case. Like it just got very complex there.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, he calls people, he calls them in, he says, you know, drop your buffs. It's the Urge. Well, not exactly. They're going to draw rocks to split into two teams, and then two players are going to draw gray rocks. And even now I'm trying to describe this and it's like, oh my God. Two players draw gray rocks. They are not on any team. They're not competing. The other 10 players are divided into two teams of five. Those two teams are Evie, Danny, Deshaun, Sydney, Ricard on the blue team versus Xander, Shan, Heather, Tiffany, Liana on the losing team. They are going to have to earn their way to the merge. And this is a convoluted twist with convoluted branding on top of it. Like this whole notion of earning your way to the merge, you don't get a buff, you do get a buff. I guess that maybe helps, like the having a buff versus not having a buff can help visually like show who's vulnerable and who's not vulnerable. I don't mind that. But this idea of like, you're not actually in the merge yet is very unnecessarily confusing in my opinion. Just say you've all made the merge, but some of you are safe and some of you aren't. Those that are safe have their buffs already. Those that aren't don't. Cause I assume what they want to do is like have to force them to like hand their buff to the other people once they're not immune anymore. It just right out of the gate, this is just unnecessarily confusing.
Yeah. It's not like there are still three tribes and there's a merge tribe. Like they're all going to go to tribal council together. It's not like they're going to, it's not like they're going to have like the safe people sitting over where jury sits, like watching, you know, eating hot dogs a la Heroes versus Villains. That's just not going to be the situation. It was very confusing and like earning their way. And now you're going to, maybe it's also to make them feel like they really, really had to battle their way out. So if the event, it doesn't happen, they'll feel more slighted, because they earned their way. These other people didn't. And then they were given it. I don't really know. I think that it's a little exhausting, a little convoluted.
Yeah.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So they start competing, and this is actually something I didn't catch the first time I was watching, but there's a great Jeff moment followed by some fun little editing here during the challenge.
This gives new meaning to one of my favorite phrases. You gotta dig deep.
Dig deep.
Dig deep.
And then... So obviously without the visual, it's hard to know what's happening there, but they're editing the music with the visuals of them like digging in the sand, like and like banging on the boulder. It was actually really cool. But I just like this part.
This gives new meaning to one of my favorite phrases. You got to dig deep.
I love it. I love football coach Jeff Probst, like dig deep. Like it reminds me of volleyball practices. Like he's like, come on. I feel like Jeff has gotten so into being like a motivational speaker this season during the challenges, like him like rooting on Heather. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but like the most amazing display of teamwork we've ever seen in the history of this game. He loves it. He loves being the coach rooting them on.
It's like they, like the blue team just helped each other, boost each other up over the, you know, over the wall. They just did that. Then the yellow team comes and they do it and they're struggling a little more, but they get through it. And Jeff is just like, we've never seen this before, except when just earlier when blue did it. But this we've never seen before. I'm happy that Jeff is into it, but there must be something about people climbing walls that makes people feel like they need to be really hyperbolic, because it's just like American Ninja Warrior when they're like, it's the first mom over 40 that has brown hair that went up the warped wall. She just made history. Like not everything is history, Jeff.
Like it's okay. They just they did it. They moved on to the next round. It wasn't like they did like the fastest we've ever seen it. Like we just saw Danny scale this wall like it was nothing. And then I did feel like during this entire challenge, he was really like, it's anyone's game now, guys. Like, you know, there is one. The blue tribe is clearly a ton stronger. But the puzzle, right, guys? You remember that? Who's to say?
Yeah, it's like this is like Jeff. You don't point it out. Like we all know that the puzzle is the great equalizer. The second you say it's the great equalizer, now I'm like, I don't believe it.
Well, what was the point of this 1,000-pound boulder? You know, like
That boulder didn't look that heavy. Also,
no, it didn't. It looked very deep, though. Very
exactly.
Like, I think like Liana, I'm saying that her name, right? Liana, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. I didn't want to say like Liana. Liana, when she was in the pit, like it felt like it was up to her head. So they did, you know, they had to dig deep. But then the actual rolling, it didn't seem that bad, but they were all exhausted. They were barely walking, pushing it. They couldn't climb on top of the boulder. It was a brutal one. And then it to come down, of course, the puzzle, the great equalizer. I did like this puzzle was kind of looked like it was a slide puzzle.
Yeah, it was like a word puzzle, but it was like a hybrid slide puzzle. So I think how it worked is that you had all of the letters as tiles, and then each word was its own. The center was open. So there were two sides to it. And I think there were two slots for you to move a letter up and out of the way. So you had to like carefully sort of like rearrange the letters in order to get them to the right position. I've never seen a puzzle like that before myself, but I did think it was interesting. Not exactly the kind of puzzle that makes it anyone's game, though, since it's a very linear sort of structure.
And this was a puzzle. Both tribes seemed to solve it pretty quickly. And then it's sort of a Tower of Hanoi like esque puzzle in that once you have the pattern down of slide this up, move it over, slide it up, move it over, you can get in a rhythm then and get it moving.
Yeah. So blue team wins, blue team undefeated still, even though they're not the same tribe. They then have to choose between Nasir and Erica, the two that drew the gray rocks, for who is going to join their team and become immune and join the merge feast and tribe. And then who is going to be sent off to Exile Island for 2 days. They go into a huddle. And then they come out and Danny says, okay, we did paper, rock, scissors. And even before, you know, Erica expressed suspicion and Danny later tells us that he faked it. I was like, what? It did not look like you did paper, rock, scissors or rock, paper, scissors. And it looked like you just talked for about 2 seconds. And then turn back around. Like, I saw no arm movements whatsoever. At least fake doing it, right? Like, I felt like it was so unbelievable right from the get-go.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, look, in Big Brother, when we were deciding, you know, who would go and compete in the wildcard comps, there were some fake rock, paper, scissors, but people were faking them, you know? Like, I witnessed some of these fake stage rock, paper, scissors happen in front of me. And I was like, okay, like, I don't really believe this, but this is fine. Like, I like that you're going through the motions here. But yeah, it just seemed like he turned around and then he alludes to later that it was just a lie he just made up on the spot. Like, did everyone agree to this? Is this just kind of feels like a blunder, a slap in the face. I don't know.
It's also just a really strange way of determining the fate of two separate people, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're like, okay, who between Nasir and Erica are we going to take? I know, let's play rock, paper, scissors for it. Wait, how? Okay, I guess if I win, we take Nasir and then you play against me. And then if you win, we take Erica. Is it best 2 out of 3? What happens if they tie? How many times are they going to tie? Like, it's a very strange way of determining that. Like, at least just say eeny, money, mo. Exactly. Like evens or odds. It doesn't really make a lot of sense that you would have done rock, paper, scissors or paper, rock. I did like that. I believe it was Jeff immediately was like, oh, you did rock, paper, scissors. Like after he said paper, rock, scissors.
Yeah. And he kept saying, though, paper, rock, scissors. I don't know if this is a regional thing that some people say paper, rock, scissors.
I've heard it before. It's not unprecedented that I think I've heard paper, rock, scissors. But I do think, I mean, according to, you know, the most common way I've most commonly heard it as rock, paper, scissors.
Yes, I think that is the most common way. You know, it's not like I've heard scissors, paper, rock. But yeah, especially because like if you're really doing it, if you really don't care, I feel like it's probably would make more sense to send Nasir because he has very clearly demonstrated he can scale the palm trees. He can make fire. If these are two people you really both see as tight allies with you, I feel like there's some kind of, oh, let's just be kind and we can send Nasir and just bring him back in. It's wild to me that it's 2 days again, especially with just such the condensed timeline. 2 days is a sixth of the game so far. So that is just a major, major time to be away from everyone.
Mm-hmm. And this is where things start to get really strange. Now, so Erica tells Jeff that she thought the rock, paper, scissors was a cover and that she was expecting to be exiled. Nasir goes off with the safe people. But right away, it's just like, okay, so they chose to take Nasir. They sent Erica away. I have to imagine that they assume Erica's going to get an advantage. This is confirmed later by Sydney, who says, I expect Erica got some kind of advantage. So they had to assume that that was going to happen and that they were essentially giving her an advantage. And the trade-off would be that she wouldn't be there for 2 days and they'd be able to put, I guess, put a target on her. But I don't know when this happened. When did they decide we want to target Erica? Was it before or after they decided to send her off? How did it factor in that they, I assume, assumed that she would get an advantage or a power? And why? Like, what is the plan? Who are the people that they think they have to put those votes there and not be disadvantaged in the next vote since they're now in the minority if Ua and Yasa team up? I know none of these things. And I'm genuinely concerned that I won't know them even in the next episode.
Yeah. And I don't know if we'll ever really know them. I think that it's, you know, I'm hoping for some sort of secret scene next week. This week's secret scene, I feel like we didn't really get much out of that. It's like waiting for exit interviews now. I'm really interested to see even what was that discussion amongst all of them when they were deciding that they were going to send Erica out. What did they say, you know, to Evie, to Ricard, of this is our justification of why? Because it seemed like, once they went to their merge feast, Evie was like, well, why Erica? Did you guys not feel good with her? So even that interaction seems a little confusing. I Luvu has always been a big question mark to me. I feel like we've seen very brief glimpses of this is who's tight. Actually, no, never mind. We don't trust Nasir. Actually, never mind. We don't trust this person. And now we found out that the guys plus Sydney maybe have been worried about an all-women's alliance. I don't think that we've ever seen any glimpses of that from them before. So that all is, the editing is very interesting.
Well, we did hear from Danny. I think it was in the episode 4, perhaps, talk about being worried about the men, or it might've been actually in the last episode. I don't remember. But he did talk about it at one point. And that was part of why they were thinking about throwing again. You know, that's how they pitched it to Nasir. They had to throw to make sure that another guy doesn't go home. But it doesn't make sense to me that they would want to take from their own team necessarily, unless Deshaun feels very good about Evie, and they feel like they can pull Evie in, I just don't know who the other numbers that they feel they have are at this point. But we'll see. We go to the reward, the merge feast. Evie talks about being pumped. They made the merge, they're eating. They talk about how they believe this is one of the hardest seasons ever, being a big fan of the show. And again, I feel like we're often being told this. I feel like we very rarely see it, other than the fact that they are very dirty and beat up all the time. I actually feel like the secret scene that we got with Erica was a little more sort of clear about how difficult this was. The secret scene consisted of Erica on Exile. First of all, like talking through tears, basically, like struggling to not break down at every sentence. And then like making a pot of rice and being like, this is the most substantial meal I've had in days. And they talk about how they've been eating basically nothing. Which again, for some reason, I feel like in the early days of Survivor, I feel like we saw how difficult it was. I feel like for whatever reason, we're just not seeing it here. We're being told a few times, but I'm not seeing it.
I think later on Xander says we haven't eaten anything in 3 days, like we've consumed zero calories, and that just does play a huge effect in the game. And it's not like we've seen them, I feel like in old Survivor you would see them looking like emaciated, gnawing on rocks to try to get anything, and I think it is probably a It's a harm of all the twists of all this production that we're not seeing these moments at camp, that we're not seeing how exhausted and run down all these people are. It's like in Big Brother, you don't see any of the have not stuff. Whereas in reality, that plays a huge factor of what information are you letting slip? Who are you really bonding with? You're not getting any sleep. You're just exhausted. And when you're exhausted, your brain's working at such a different speed than other people. And you're just making mistakes. And I think probably the lack of food accounts for some mistakes that we saw. But I wish we were seeing that more because, yeah, for Erica to literally be crying, eating rice is just very telling of how miserable they've all been.
Yeah. Well, Nasir is also pumped to have made the merge. He's also pumped about the new buff.
It smells really good, and I love the color.
Loves the color.
It is like it's a very nice color. I do really like these buffs. I was thinking maybe I should go buy one. I like them.
There you go. This is when Danny confirms that he did really pretend to do the paper, rock, scissors. He says it's very important for the men to stay strong and to send a woman home. And that's why he wants Erica out. And I will say again, to me, that is not sufficient explanation whatsoever. Like, it's literally like, a woman must go. Therefore, a woman on my tribe must go. Like, why? Why Erica? I mean, we've heard why Erica when she was one of only three women to choose from, but now you have plenty of other women to choose from. Why not one of them? I'm confused. Help me, Danny.
Yeah. And I mean, really, it's all the women on the other side other than Xander. It's you have Tiffany, you have Sean, Liana, Heather, and now Erica. So It doesn't really make sense, even if you, as we kind of saw at the end of the episode, want to look out for Shannon, want to look out for Ileana, why not take a gander at Tiffany? It doesn't really make, I don't really know what their thought process is here, other than I think when you're in the game, you want to play the game, and they've probably been thinking for the past, you know, 13, 14 days now, let's flip on Erica. Let's flip on Erica. The first chance we have, maybe let's take someone out and it would be Erica first because she's more of a threat than Heather. And now that they have the opportunity, they're just so locked in on that they can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah. So, We see Danny talking to Evie, basically calling out to their face, like, I was worried about the men being sent out. That's not what was happening, right? I'm wondering again, like, the only theory I can come up with is that, again, the connection that Evie and Deshaun formed on, you know, Advantage Island, where Evie told Deshaun about all of these things, that they might be banking on that. And so when Evie is part of this winning group, they have a conversation with Danny and Deshaun and maybe even Sydney. And there's maybe some talk about their two groups coming together and, you know, maybe minus Xander, maybe with Xander, who knows? And maybe the way to sort of create this mega alliance of Luvu and Yasa is to sacrifice a couple of Luvu numbers, or at least one Luvu number to show like, hey, we're down for this. And we're with you guys and we're not just going to screw you over at the next vote because our tribe has the numbers. That's the only thing I can think of at this time. I don't know why they'd feel so confident immediately without even talking to like Liana or anybody else, on Yasa, but that's the only thing I can think, because they're talking about it immediately without even talking to the losing group yet. So that's all I got.
Yeah, I would guess it's an olive branch. It's also tricky because who knows how genuine people are when they're throwing out names. That's another thing I've really took away from playing. People will just say names and they just don't mean it. And it depends on the edit. Are they showing this as being genuine, or are they showing it as being like something someone's just saying just to say a word? And I wish we were getting more behind the scene confessionals, but it does seem like they're genuine and wanting Erica out, and really gunning for her. Not even just it could be Erica or Heather. So that's interesting.
Yes. In the meantime, we go over to Exile, and Erica talks about how she is the least equipped person to be here, especially, which is funny because they at the winning Merge Feast group segment, they were like, oh, we feel so bad for Erica. Like, this is going to suck for her. And Sydney, of course, was like, ah, she'll be fine. She's like all happy-go-lucky and stuff. And meanwhile, Erica's just like, oh my God, I'm so ill-equipped to be here. But this is great. I mean, we finally get some content from Erica, who up until this point, we have gotten basically nothing of. Unfortunately, again, this is basically just a repeat of what we got before, only she's more miserable because she's on Exile, where she talks about being on the outs. And wanting to play like a lion. The new stuff primarily comes from, her really being able to finally tell her story about who she mm-hmm. is, where she comes from. And that, her parents, came over to Canada and she grew up in Canada. I knew there was a Canadian on this cast. I forgot who it was. But it's Erica. And how being on Survivor is like a love letter to her parents. This is, again, I'm really enjoying this, this content, this personal content from the cast, especially because as Shan says later, it's such a diverse cast. Mm-hmm. And we're getting to hear so many different kinds of stories and it's really, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I absolutely love this. My heart went out so hard for Erica. Of course, I've been rooting for Erica as a under the radar. She's the puzzle queen, I would say. You know, you would see her in little screen time whenever a puzzle would come up. And she just is kind of like plucky and seems like she's trying her best, trying to play like a lion. And I really, really respect that. But I love seeing her backstory, seeing her saying that this is a love letter to her parents. Ooh, I just got chills just saying that. It is so moving because, again, it's all this cast is just so good. They all have such interesting layers. They all come from such different places, have gone through their own struggles. And I think I really look forward to the one moment it seems like we're getting every episode where we're taking a step back from the twist, the game, and we're really seeing who is this person. I'm interested. This is now where like my game side goes. If we'll get this from everyone as the season continues, it feels like we keep getting surprised ones from people. We saw like Deshaun a few episodes back, and that was surprising me when we got that one. But I've really, really enjoyed all of these. I wish we had been doing this. I hope that they continue to do this because it's a reminder of these are actual people. And I'm glad that they didn't just stuff all of these in the premiere episode and then never touch them again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And apparently Shan is also from Canada. I think I knew that, but I forgot. Not great at keeping track of who's from Canada, I guess. We then head over to the I just called them the losers, because they lost, but maybe not for long. So Xander's feeling down. This is when he says, they're in Mergatory. He might have to play his idol. But none of this really matters because I don't think that it's going to happen that way. So this is when we really start to, see, more of the strategy happening. Right away, we hear Shan talking to Liana in front of Tiffany, asking Liana, so did you get that advantage? Liana's like,
oh,
what are you doing? And Tiffany's like, oh, so you did get it, didn't you? I knew it. And it's like, oh boy. And this is, I mean, this was definitely an awkward moment, but it was another one where it was like, what happened after this? Like, what was Shan, like, what I want to hear from Shan. What is her reaction to having just screwed this up, if it was a screw up? Mm-hmm. And also, as you mentioned earlier, like, how is she feeling about Ricard at this point? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much I want to know that I feel like we're missing out on, but this is interesting. So, it wouldn't surprise me if this was a genuine screw up on Shan's part. She has been a little bit sloppy in the past. And again, we keep getting this narrative that like Ricard is really the, sort of like, in his head strategic one. And Shan is kind of more of the, executor, the person that goes out and forms bonds with people. but maybe isn't always, thinking the most strategically, I guess. But I don't feel that. Like, they keep telling me that. I don't feel it. Shan, to me, feels very strategic. Mm-hmm. And she seems like she is somebody that is thinking all the time. But she is also somebody that is maybe a little bit sloppy, which is, you know, a characteristic that many great players have, we've seen it very recently. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was a genuine, just kind of like, whoops. But it also, like, and I don't think this is the case, but it's not impossible that this was intentional, depending on when it took place, especially, if it was a way to like, oh, whoops, I just caused dissension between one of your allies and you, and now you have to rely on me more. It's kind of a sort of like a gutsy thing to do, that they're going to, you know, come to you more than the person that they just pissed off. But that's, I mean, that's also something that I think Shan is capable of. So I would have loved to hear from Shan about this moment.
Yeah, I think when I saw it, when I first viewed it, I just saw it as, she messed up. She, Lyanna must have told her Tiffany's my closest ally. And so Shan was just assuming, okay, she must be the closest ally. Maybe if I reveal that I know about this, it will endear Tiffany with me too. And now this is a three and we can be a tight three moving forward. I think maybe the lack of food might play in here of, if it is a slip up. I'm hesitant to believe that it was purposeful, just because I feel like we would have seen a confessional, because it would be an amazing play. That said, even if it's a slip up, I don't think it really did that much damage to Shan. It feels like this really just caused dissension between Tiff and Lyanna, and Shan is slipping through. That said, Lyanna probably in the back of her head will remember this. Anytime anyone reveals information that you don't want to be revealed in front of someone else, it's going to be a little bit like, ooh, I didn't know about this. I don't quite like that you're doing this to me, and you're putting me in a vulnerable spot. I don't think it'll affect their relationship really moving forward that much. But I did really enjoy this. And then Tiff really hopping in. Oh, you have it? I wouldn't have told anyone either. Genius. That was so, so good. Amazing. You're so good at this. And it's like, oh, great. Like, you, Tiffany's like, wait, let me know everything. Like, what was it? What's happening? And when Tiffany first said that, and Lyanna was like, oh, I'll tell you later. I'm like, oh, maybe she's not going to tell Shan what this is. That's kind of interesting. Or maybe she is going to lie to one of them about what one of these are. And I was like, this could be a tricky spot now for her. I also just want to quick hop back just one step, talking about Xander coming in. Xander coming into the Mergatory was one of the most slapstick funny things I think I've ever seen this season. Just how beaten down he looks. His hair is like in his eyes. He like has bruises, like dirt's all over his face. You can see him climbing up the mountain in the back. And it looks like he's carrying like 90 pounds on his back. Like, he's just been beat up in this game. And like, you see him walking around barefoot. It just really made me chuckle. But
he was literally a human ladder in that challenge. Yes. I mean, people were like walking on his body to get up the thing. Like, he's really been giving everything for these challenges.
It is so funny. He partially probably knows that he needs to. He could see that he's the only guy. He might be screwed. But I respect that. But it just is funny. That is an instance where I was like, oh, this game has been hard on these people. He looks like he has like gone through something traumatic.
Well, there was a good comment from Fenny here who said it could be that that it was a screw up, but the edit is not trying to bury Shan, which I think is a good call, because it does feel that way. I mean, unlike the Xander moment where, you know, he screwed up with Tiffany and they really made a meal of it, of how he screwed up, with the Shan screw up, we didn't hear from Shan going, oh, I really screwed up. This is such a bad thing that I did. They kind of quickly move on to Lyanna and Tiffany and how it's bad for them. And so that probably tells you something about about how they're editing. But I do think it also, I mean, whether or not it was intentional in this way, but I think it's also, indicative of Shan's, social game still. I mean, the fact that this is who Shan is, you know, Ricard in the opening of the episode talks about like, just like always with Shan, I'm just going to have to let it go. Okay, just tell her what she wants to hear. And it's, this is something that, that I feel like, you know, the great Tony Blachos has, yes. Where there's just a little bit of their personality that is messy and kind of just like a little paranoid, a little bit like, oh, like roll your eyes at them. You don't take them entirely seriously because there's that little piece that seems off. That seems like, oh, they're screwing up. They can't help themselves. That's just them. And I just have to let that go. And it's that little foot in the door that they get on you that you accept that. And then it's like, thank you. Like you've just let me in. And that's what like a really good social game, I think can accomplish. And that seems like what Shan's doing. I mean, Shan consistently is doing things that harm her allies that would set them off, that would like, she voted out Brad, Jeannie's number one, and then Jeannie came to Shan. Took JD's advantage and then he kept coming back. She was like, Ricard, give me my advantage back. And it seems as though, even though he was mad, he is still coming back because that's just Shan. And that's what you heard from JD in the exit interviews. He was like, when she asked for it, I mean, I was just like, this is normal. This is Shan. It didn't seem like she was trying to play me because it's just who she seems to be. I think there's a lot of value to that when you have that, when you're able to sort of like use that social hold that you have on people. And it seems it's very key to Shan's game.
Yep. I completely agree. I think that I was also getting some parallels with Tony, this episode, and I've kind of been getting them for a little bit of her allies do distrust her and they will look out for her. They will, ignore any kind of mistakes or blunders that happen because she's so convincing. I mean, you can even tell on the screen, I feel like she's so charismatic. She's so likable. She has such a fantastic personality. And when you're out there and you're starving and you're exhausted, someone that has a personality like that, someone who's able to make you feel good, make you feel comfortable, make you feel supported, you will ignore a lot of red flags for that. That's someone that you feel like you can just trust. I mean, it's me and Tiffany. It's someone that you just want to go to and that you just really want to be around and want to say, okay, here's my game. Let's just work together. I just will trust you. I just will work with you. Even if there are a few red flags there.
Mm-hmm. So, Liana then tells Shan about the advantage and what it does. Liana says, I can use this to get the idol from Nasir, which I was very happy to hear because, again, it doesn't make a lot of sense for her to take it from Xander. Nasir is the obvious choice, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me that Liana was talking about Xander so much, but the fact that she says Nasir first tells me she's got her head in the right place. No matter what ends up happening, she seems to know what she's doing here. Shan says, or Xander. So maybe it's Shan that talks her into doing this. But they're locked in, the two of them. They are really locked in together. And that's not surprising given what we saw in the previous episode. But even though Shan, you know, screwed up there, she immediately, it's like, hey, no, they're good. They're good. They're tight. And I expect this to be like a duo moving forward.
I agree with that. I cannot imagine them turning on each other in any instance, really at all. I'm a little worried. I'm a little interested to see Shan talking about emotion versus logic. We've seen that a lot. I'm interested to see if that will come and play down the road. But I'm just assuming that they will just ride for each other in this game. And it makes sense. They've really bonded. They've said, you're just the person I'm going to trust. I'm just going to trust you. And they both feel like that. So I think that will be a very strong duo moving forward. it feels like people kind of are starting to see that, though. We see that the next scene with Tiffany. That worries me a little bit, but I think that they'll have each other's backs.
Yes, Tiffany immediately says she feels like she's on the outs. She says that Liana already has a connection with Shan. They ran off together. And so she's going to have to just go with everybody at the moment. So she's clearly feeling like her connection to Liana is not super strong. This might have changed a bit after they talked. I don't know when this confessional took place, but she is going to ask Liana about the advantage. Tiffany says that she's not even going to tell Evie. She wouldn't have told anybody. But Liana's not pleased. She says Tiffany's playing too hard. But she's also very likable, very fun. She says she's poison, which is a very, very strong sort of word to use. This is interesting to me because, again, you sometimes have to try to read into the edit. Liana says that Tiffany is poison. Tiffany says, I'm not sure I'll have Liana's back like I did before. So with Tiffany's confessional, to me, it could very well be editing misdirection. Like, how do you feel about Liana now? I feel fine. Even though, like, is there a world where you don't trust Liana? Well, maybe I wouldn't have her back as much as I did before because of all of this, but I still have her back. I think that Tiffany is perhaps not as anti-Liana as it seems. However, Liana calling Tiffany poison is indication to me that she's probably kind of done with Tiffany, and I would be concerned for Tiffany's safety here.
Yeah, I mean, I really have loved Tiffany this entire season. I can't lie. I mean, I've really loved a lot of this cast, but I do just like someone who will be messy, who will say, put their foot down and say, no, this is what I'm going to do. We are just voting Boche out. I don't care. It surprised me even last episode how close Liana and Tiffany were, because it felt like they kind of butted heads on the Boche vote. But I was very surprised how quick Liana was to calling her a major threat, and seeing that she's this huge, huge target. That said, I feel like Tiffany will just play hard. I think she will continue to play hard. I think a lot of these people are going to keep playing hard. She will, I'm interested to see if she will tell Evie about this, or if she will tell Xander about this, or, you know, whoever down the line, now that she has this information.
Yes. And this is when we get a little bit of sort of a more confusing sort of content. Liana does pitch, it seems, for Xander to be voted out. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that there are only six people vulnerable at this point. Xander is one of them. But we also don't know, I think, when she's talking about this. When is Xander going to be voted out? But she is mentioning it. And Tiffany does tell us, she says that Liana is emotional about Xander. And that's a problem, that they shouldn't be targeting one of their own. And this is when she says she's not sure she'll have Liana's back. It does seem like there is at least some truth to this. I mean, Liana is talking about Xander a lot, and this is the first time I've actually heard her say to another person in real time, not in a confessional, that she's actively targeting him. But again, I don't know exactly when she would want to target him. It doesn't make a lot of sense for her, I think, at this time to target Xander in the same way that it doesn't make a lot of sense necessarily to target Erica. So to me, it makes a little more sense that she would be planning on, either stealing from, or here's what maybe happened. Maybe she talked to Shan and she said, hey, I want to steal the thing from Nasir. Because she says steal it from Nasir, I think, multiple times. Yeah. But when Shan says or Xander, the plan is probably if she ends up stealing from Xander, you then have to vote Xander out afterward. And maybe that's what she's talking about. And maybe that's what Tiffany's why would you do that when Nasir is there? It's, again, hard to know, but that's what we've got from them.
Yeah, I was just looking to see if this was a conversation. I'm pretty sure that here also Liana says to Tiffany, we can steal it from Nasir. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even bring up Xander. It's It's interesting. I worry that this is blinders. Just you had one goal, you can move forward with it. I don't know maybe if she's seeing Xander, if maybe Tiffany and Evie have really been pushing a women's alliance. I sort of wonder about that because everyone else that's at risk is a woman. Maybe that's kind of where her head is at. Wish that we knew more.
Yeah. Well, the red buffers, as Xander calls them, end up coming back. And we see Nasir and Xander connect. Nasir says that he's got Xander's back and he means it. It was very interesting to watch the two of them interact because I feel like we don't usually get these kinds of like raw introduction and like mm-hmm. conversations. And again, I feel like there are bits of this editing where we're seeing these things happen that I'm really enjoying. I really feel like the criticism of the editing this season is coming from sort of like the overview direction of the editing of like having to focus so much on advantages and all of that. When they actually get good stuff to work with, I'm really enjoying what they're doing. And so we see this sort of like, I've been watching you in challenges. You're so great. Oh, thank you so much. That's so cool. You know, they're going to be coming for us, right? Like, don't worry. I got you. And it was just fun to see that.
Yeah, it was so enjoyable. It just felt very, very genuine. Nasir complimenting Xander, being like, "Man, you're killing it, bro. You're killing these comps." Like, of course, Nasir loves the comps. Like, it warmed my heart. Like, you know, these two random people coming together and really being like, "Yeah, let's have each other back." And I believe Nasir when he's saying, "You know, I got your back. Don't worry about it." That was really fun. I was a little worried that they were doing it just so clearly out in front of everyone. I'm like, guys, maybe like go get some water. You know, let's go to the well. But it's interesting. Like, you know, I'd love live feed cameras in Survivor. Probably not, but you know, it's very fun to kind of see, oh yeah, these are people really meeting each other. It's like when Shan, all the red buffs were coming up and Shan was like, "Oh, I finally get to meet all of you guys," and just running up and hugging. It's so fun. All these people, this is their first time meeting, you know. Nasir didn't know Evie's name until this episode. Like it's kind of like a fun Avengers type, everyone's getting together. Where's the fallout gonna be?
Yes, exactly. Now, then we get to a portion of the episode that is very interesting to me. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this on the show before. There's a very brief sort of in the background conversation happening between Tiffany and Sydney. And it seems very important because Tiffany and Sydney, they seem to clash a little bit on, you know, their own version of Advantage Island that one time. So it's weird to hear them talking like they're in cahoots. But also, Tiffany is saying, "So she had to tell me, but she didn't tell me," which sounds like she's talking about what we just saw, Liana having to tell her about the advantage. But it would be so weird if she's telling Sydney this information, considering their history. And it would also be so weird that we get that piece of it and nothing else in the episode. I have no idea what's going on here.
No, and honestly, I didn't pick up on that conversation happening. This is the first time I'm hearing about it. That clip, I found it weird, but I thought that that was just them being like, "Oh, the women might be in cahoots." I don't know if I blacked out when this was happening or was it really like that brief? I'm going to have to go back and watch this now. Yeah, I have no idea what this means.
Yeah, it really felt like it, even on the first watch, I was listening and it was like, "Oh my God, she's telling Sydney." And then it pans away and I'm like, "Okay, I guess we'll go back to that." We didn't. And then when I watched it again, I was like, "What is she saying? So she had to tell me, but she didn't tell me." And it's like, what is she? It feels like if she is ratting this out, wouldn't it be in the episode? And it is in the episode, but wouldn't it be more in the episode? Or maybe they just missed it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, or they would have talked about it again at some point, but we never see Tiffany. I think maybe we see Tiffany and Sydney like talking on the path together, but we never get really another deep exploration of that. Is that going to be a flashback? Maybe.
Maybe we'll get it in the second half of this episode, right? Like maybe that's the problem, is that they really are looking at it like it's two halves of one thing.
Yeah, and now we know that they love a flashback, and so it maybe that's kind of a foreshadowing, an Easter egg, if you caught it. It would shock me if Tiffany was telling Sydney this.
What if Liana goes to use her thing to steal an idol, and then she tries to steal from either Xander or Nasir, and she asks them, and they go, "Nope, I don't have one." And then they flash back to Tiffany talking to Sydney, and then Sydney giving them that'd be wild.
That would be absolutely wild. Okay, this was a prediction that I did have last night with our group of Tiffany now knows this. Tiffany could go to Xander or Nasir and say, "Hey, just give it to me." I'm very confused still on the stealing rules. If someone leaves it at camp, what happens there? Does this have to happen on Tribal? You probably know that.
It does. So she has to ask before the votes are cast at Tribal.
Okay. Yeah. And then in this case, I can see maybe everyone will know about this advantage. It's so powerful. Tiffany feels slighted. We know if Tiffany feels slighted, she will have a very strong reaction to it. I could see this, and then them saying, "Well, we gave you a little Easter egg. Maybe you picked it up. Maybe it's the game within the game." You know, I do just want Liana to have an idol. I just like her so much, but I live for the drama and the mess.
Yeah. Well, we pull away from that conversation to get to some Danny, Nasir, and Xander talk a little bit later. Danny says to us that the easier is better. Easier is better at the merge. The best option is Erica. Nasir seems to agree, which again is surprising to me. Nasir, who was just, a couple of scenes earlier, all about Tribe Strong, get us to the six, is now going, "Yep, Erica." And Danny is worried that she'll come back with a grievance. And so I'm wondering if maybe this is where this stemmed from, that because they didn't pick her to come on the Tribe, that they she is now going to be against them and they can get rid of her. Again, I don't know why it needs to be her and not somebody else that's not on their Tribe, they don't have a connection to. But again, it's maybe some kind of appeasement or something like that. But who knows?
Yeah, it feels, I'm pretty sure Danny said in some confessional, like, she's just at the bottom. And the sense I was got was he wants to flip before she can flip on them. This is an opportunity. She's gone for 2 days. They can use it to bond with everyone else. And it just is easy. Granted, of course, Survivor is never easy. But I don't, do we know how big of a fan Danny is of this game?
I think that I don't think he's like the biggest super fan in the world, but I think that he is a fan.
Yeah. So I didn't know if this was kind of a, let's just stick this easy vote, let's just move forward. I've made up this mind. And it feels like from the edit that Danny's the one that's really, really pushing it. Curious to see how much does Deshaun, Nasir, Sydney, we see Sydney pitching it in a little bit, but that is all interesting.
Yeah, so we see Sydney pitching to Tiffany and Evie that she said, "I can't stand Heather, but Erica should be the one to go," which again sort of like leads me to believe that this like Luvu 4 potentially is pitching like, "Hey, we'll work with you, Yasa, Tiffany and Evie here. It'll be two groups of four coming together, and we'll snip off our extra bits in Erica and Heather," and saying that Erica should be the one to go first, because she might have an advantage from this Exile Island situation. And that's going to be Sydney's pitch. Then Evie and Sydney are both there for the pitch to Shan and Ricard that they should vote out Erica. We hear from Yasa a little bit later that they're like, or Xander, Shan, Liana talk amongst each other. They're like, "Oh, Luvu seems to be cannibalizing themselves." is this too good to be true? Mm-hmm. And so again, it seems to me like there is a potential Yasa Luvu group coming together, but if so, then they are trying to either cover for it, with Shan there. Or they're just like, reasonably hesitant to be like, is this real? Are they giving us a potential advantage here by taking out one of their own?
Yeah. And all of this, I feel like, falls also with the dramatic irony that we know that it might not matter that all of this is happening. Mm-hmm. And they're really showing all of their cards to almost everyone that they are very happy sending Erica out. Which I would be a little bit hesitant about, just because you don't know what this advantage might be. But you do have to say something. I don't really see these two fours working together in total strength moving forward, or else I think we would have seen some big conversation of like, let's work together here.
Yes. And that's when we get to, through all of this chaos, it seems, and the one thing that they actually chose to show us and focus on, which tells me that it's probably going to be the most important thing, and that all of this stuff I'm talking about with Yasa and Luvu, if it did happen, becomes irrelevant because there's another group forming. Shan says that Liana is the only one she finds reliable in this game. However, she also likes Danny and Deshaun, and it seems as though Shan is the one that pitches this. This is very important. Who started the alliance? She pitches this to the four of them. She talks about how it's a very diverse season, and so they're all excited to be able to work with other Black people, essentially, to help lift each other up. And Deshaun is super excited about it. He said, like, I'd never thought I'd get a chance to play with another Black person in this game. And so it's very touching to be able to have this opportunity. Danny's very excited about it. They're all like super pumped about this. And it's amazing to me because this, I believe, was filmed before Big Brother 23 happened. And so if this alliance comes together and runs the game, I can't imagine, like, they must have been looking at Big Brother 23 like, this is hilarious. Like, this is, I can't believe that this has come to, I guess it's actually not that surprising because this is the first time that we have seen casting this diverse in this way. Obviously Survivor has had, you know, Fiji and Cook Islands, but that was kind of a different thing, right? It's wild that in two separate sort of game universes, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, if you haven't watched Big Brother, Claire's season, there was an alliance of the Black players on that season, a six person alliance, and they called it the Cookout. And they ran that game from start to finish. They made it to the final six. And Claire knows firsthand how effective an alliance like that can be.
Oh, absolutely. It's actually funny. When I was in jury and I first found out about the Cookout Alliance and the six of them all working together, I'm pretty sure I was like, this is going to happen in Survivor too. I think that I could see one, this is just is a very good alliance. It's just as a good a strategy. You are coming together. You have a very shared experience. Anytime you're in a game like this, you will try to bond with people over anything. You'll try to bond with people over being a woman, being from the same place, being wherever. And having the shared experience of being Black in America or in Canada is just a very uniting force. And being able to come together and work together and, you know, elevate each other's games, I think, especially everyone that is out there is a fan. Everyone that was on my season is a fan, and they know the history of this game. They know that these seasons usually aren't this diverse. And why not come together and really bond and really carry each other to the next level and look out for each other and just really have each other's backs like so many white contestants have in the past, unconscious, you know, biased. But why not just say, hey, let's just bring each other and run it out. And you know, now as someone who's watching it, I absolutely love it. I enjoyed it in the game too, but it just is different when you're being voted out. Now I'm really getting to enjoy it as a fan, and I'm like, yeah, we love this. I kind of thought I was wrong. I mean, the very first episode we saw Abraham leave, and I was like, oh, maybe there won't be a cookout. But now that we have, I think people are calling it the camp out here.
Yes, last year on the Know-It-Alls, they talked about the camp out.
Yes, and I love it. I'm very excited to see what comes of this and how it will go forward. I think, and they were also very similarly saying, let's keep it on the down low. I was nervous for them that they were all together at one point. I was like, guys, come on, watch out. You got to watch out here, especially because some people are seeing Liana and Shan working together a little bit. But I feel like this is going to be a really interesting thing to track and see how does it play out compared to the cookout. I think if they do end up turning on each other, it is a game. I think it is a game, move forward, but I'm excited about this potential foursome.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's like, this is something that, that we talked about all season long on Big Brother. But I know that there are probably some people, again, who weren't watching Big Brother, and are maybe new to this conversation, but I really felt like, first of all, Lauren last night on the Know-It-Alls was fantastic, so you should watch it anyway. But she sort of had a moment to explain and to describe how much it meant to her just to see something like this, and I really feel like that is the best way to understand. If you don't understand, like why something like this would come together and why it means so much to Black people who watch the show or who have played the show, who, you know, I think that there are probably a lot of people that would just take it for granted that like you go on, into a game like this, you're just gonna see a ton of people that look like you. It's just, you're going to be familiar with, you know, everybody you see, they're probably going to come from relatively similar backgrounds. That's just the way things are. And if you are not somebody that can expect that, or could expect that in the last 20 years, then you would have either imagined yourself going on or went on yourself, expecting I'm going to be one of the only ones, if not the only one, that looks like me. And that's just the reality. That's just the reality for me. So for them to be able to come onto this season, look around and see some faces that look like them, there's something there that I think that if you haven't experienced it yourself, you can't really understand, how much that might mean to you, and how much you might want to lift each other up and support each other in that moment. So I think that's what we're seeing here. We don't know how long this will last. It's what we saw in Big Brother at the very least. And it seems to be the instinct here, on Survivor. But I am very interested and very curious to see how this goes as well, Claire, because, on Big Brother, a secret alliance, even if they're not the majority, can really take firm control of the game, even when they're in the minority. It's very easy. They just need to have a couple of parachute alliances, a couple of, you know, pawns, as they occasionally called them. And you can pretty much just, you know, maintain influence and run the game from that spot. However, it becomes more and more difficult as the numbers tighten up. So like on Big Brother, as you go from like, you know, 9 to 8 to 7, when you're trying to get to 6, it gets tougher and tougher because that one person might win a challenge and they might win something, and then everything can like blow up from there. Survivor is kind of the opposite, where, the difficult part is front loaded. They currently have 4 players out of 12. And in order to maintain a majority for the vote, they need at least 3 more players. So 7 out of 12. And they can't just like sort of like have a vague concept of, well, if this person is in power, we have these two people up here and they can maintain their secrecy by having a limited amount of people they can vote for and being able to hide their voting block. It has to be, it's us four plus at least three others voting for one person and then another time the next time and then so on and so forth. And they need to survive until the final seven. So five vote outs until they're the majority and they can do whatever they want without any additional players. That's the front loaded difficulty. Once they get to seven, they can easily get to four. It's a given basically. But it is more difficult to get to that point, than in Big Brother. And, because secrecy is so, so vital to the operation and in Survivor, things are a little more out in the open with all of these votes. So I'm very curious to see how they intend to operate, and like which players they're going to pull in. You know, you have a player like Liana, who I imagine is, you know, attached to somebody like Evie, maybe Tiffany, who knows at this point. You've obviously got Shannon Ricard, but how secure is Ricard? Right. Danny and Deshaun seem to very securely have Sydney. That's probably the most valuable number they have right now. But then also, you know, Nasir seems to be somebody that's with them. So they just need a couple of those to work out, and also feel comfortable in the group. And that's the tricky part. I'm super curious to see how this goes.
Yeah, me as well. I mean, I think Shan and Liana are in fantastic spots. Shan has a hidden immunity idol. Liana could very quickly come into possession of a hidden immunity idol. I think hidden immunity idols are going to be a lot of what they're up against. Deshaun feels like he's in a good spot. I'm most worried for Danny here. But if you have two hidden immunity idols amongst the four of you, and maybe people don't know that you would play them on each other, there's potential there to move forward to, you know, the next vote out the next week. I'm interested to see how much will there be a master plan, as it was called in my season, or is this more of a, hey, if I hear your name, I'll let you know that I won't vote for you. I'll use advantages if I can on you. We'll see. But I do really like this. It does really warm my heart.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what we have. I mean, we did our best, I think, to extrapolate from what little we got. It really disheartens me that that this might be it from the 2 days of merge that we got. Like, if we open the next episode on Erica coming back, which means it's 2 days later, I'm going to be really disappointed, because this is what it will you know, make the rest of the game. I mean, it's these relationships and connections and alliances and groups and all of that are formed in this moment, in these couple of days, that will have dramatically lasting impacts in for the rest of the game moving forward, especially in such a fast paced game. And I loved what little we got, but I want way more. Especially in an episode where there was no tribal, I feel like how is it that we only got this one proper merge segment? We got two mini segments with two separate groups, but that barely was anything. It didn't really include any of these new formations. I need so much more of this.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the timeline will be. Supposedly Erica comes back, she reveals what happens. It looks like we're going to go right into the individual immunity portion, and then hopefully we get a solid chunk of time of, I guess, strategizing. I wish that we did see the relationship building more so, because once you have to go into strategy, it's difficult to really know who's tight with who, who's lying to who. I do worry. I think that this is probably all we're going to get, maybe a little bit. But I think it will mostly be Erica, again, pondering, what should I do?
Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going to go to. We're going to go to Exile, and Jeff is going to show up. And he walks up. I know he was wearing white shoes, which I felt like were a bold choice on a beach, where there's, you know, sand. And I mean, these poor players have dirt everywhere. I mean, Jeff must have like white shoes to spare here. He's just going for it. But he goes up to Erica. He says, look, I've got something for you. And so in my mind, this is how this scene would play out, right? This is in my mind. Jeff pulls out an hourglass. He says, here it is. With this, you can go back in time and reverse the history of the game, and you can change the outcome of that challenge that let the you know this group of people be immune, and instead make your group of people be immune. And so in my mind, how this plays out is that as he's explaining that, Erica takes it and flips it. She goes, okay, done. He's like, oh, no, wait. Well, you're supposed to smash it. Oh, okay. And she smashed it.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be like a, okay, well, can we just...
Yeah, she was like, how long do I have to decide? Like, she was ready for it to be like a minute. And she's like, oh, okay, here we go.
Right? Because the second it's like, are you immune or are you not immune? So he presents it as you're going to smash this hourglass. That's going to be that is if you smash the hourglass, then you know time is it's Prince of Persia. The time is rewound and the challenge outcome reverses. And that's it. And she's like, okay, well, I'm worried that it might burn some bridges with my tribe mates if I do this, because that group is majority of my tribe mates. But it's like, it's not like the other group doesn't have members of your tribe either, including yourself. And only one person gets voted out. So it's a very weak argument. Like that was the best they could do to introduce some uncertainty. This is not a cliffhanger, because nobody in their right mind would ever not smash this hourglass. And even if for some reason they weren't in their right mind and they didn't smash the hourglass, that doesn't change the fact that there is no lingering, like, ooh, will she? In my mind, like, even if she goes, the next episode starts and Erica's like, I didn't smash the hourglass. I'd be like, really? What? I was not on the edge of my seat all week long. Like, oh, I wonder what she's going to do. Like, I'm wondering how is she going to make this decision? I'm just like, yeah, she's going to smash it. And if she doesn't, okay, she's dumb. Like that's it.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, they knew that this was going to be the decision that the cliffhanger is. And I feel like like you said, probably 80% of the scenarios, it's getting smashed. And so it's a weird thing where they must have really been like, oh, it's going to be so complicated. It's going to be so tricky. Everyone's not going to know. I think it's probably everyone sitting in a room pitching ideas and they really just hype each other up of like, this one, it's going to be a great one. Though. I think that she's just going to smash it, take the individual immunity. I don't think anyone will be that mad at you for doing that. I think it will be maybe a little bit like, oh, that's annoying. Like, you'll be able to say, well, I wouldn't have done that. But you take the individual immunity. You just do it. If it's given to you, there's Evie, there's Ricard. There are people that you can vote for who aren't on your tribe. And also, they didn't pick you. So in this game, it's very fast moving. I can see a scenario where maybe she doesn't smash it, depending on how tired she is, how hungry she is. She might just say, I'm going to keep laying low. But I really liked in the secret scene, I think she made a reference to, you don't have that much time to think on Survivor. And I'm now going to take this time to think. And this is something I really talked about a lot in the show. And then once I got to jury of why didn't I stop and just think? It's so, you have to do something. You should be talking to someone. I'm sure I'm Survivor. I should be getting water. I should be looking for an idol. And you never really stop and think, how should I be positioning myself? This is really me projecting. What's really going on here? Who could be working together, or what's my best route to the end? And so I'm like kind of optimistic for Erica going into the merge of maybe she will come up with some idea of how to position herself or how she can use this to gain some allies here and move forward. But we're going to see.
We will see. Somebody just said in the chat, Glenn said, this is similar to when you chose safety until jury. Like if they had made an entire episode with a cliffhanger of will Claire choose to be safe until jury or will she, what was the other like that?
Or is my team is safe for 1 week.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah. And even in that instance, like really I saw it and I was like, okay, I'm just taking it. Like I know that my team won't be that mad at me and I know they're not really at risk at all here. And I think I'm the most at risk out of all of us. And then it's like, they just won't be that mad. And also I have to look out for myself. I'm the little gratification won't be enough here. And I really feel like if Erica only has things to gain by smashing it. If she doesn't smash it, no one will be that appreciative to it. It'll be like, well, we already knew we were safe. Thanks for not smashing it. But also like, you probably should have smashed it and we might be voting you out now. But like, you have the opportunity to be safe and you chose not to. And that was a mistake. And I'm going to make you pay for it and vote you out. But if she smashes it, then okay, now the yellow team feels very appreciative to her. They say, okay, we can run together. All these people were talking bad about you when you were gone, but we'll have your back here. Like you had our back. And even then maybe she can go back to the Luvu and say, hey, sorry guys. But let's all stick together and vote Evie out, or let's stick together and vote Ricard out. So I don't really see the benefits of her not smashing it. So
It was designed to be smashed in the same way that, you know, Paul was designed to come back in season 19. And like, you know, the Pandora's box was always designed to be open in Big Brother.
If they didn't want it smashed, they wouldn't have made it like made of glass and given her like a 2 foot long hammer. Like they want that visual so clearly. Like she's not going to be like, well, I'll put the hammer down and like doves fly out. And it's like peace has happened.
They had the winning tribe reject her and then they isolated her for 2 days while everybody else strategized. Like, again, no person in their right mind goes back to a merged tribe with all kinds of new dynamics after 2 days and being rejected by a group of six people and says, I'm good.
Yeah. If she doesn't, like you said, I will be like, okay, worried about that for you. But okay, let's keep going. You're probably going home or maybe Xander. Who knows? Mm-hmm.
And so, with that in mind, that this is designed to be smashed. If you really just like take the basics of this twist, what it basically is okay, it's a merge. Now we're randomly going to split you into two teams, put you in a challenge, and the winning team is vulnerable and the losing team actually is safe. That's the actual twist, but we're going to blame it on one of the players. We're going to make it seem like it was the player's fault and not our fault that this happened because they made a choice. Like in Big Brother when the coaches came in, it's like, well, they chose to, if they hadn't pressed the button, then they wouldn't be in here. So it's really all their fault.
Yeah. Yep. It's a hoo hoo hoo. We're going to, you know, make everyone be mad at one person, but really it's a, if anyone is really thinking, I guess, rationally, they'll be like, this is production. We should be mad at production. Not necessarily this one person. It was the obvious choice here.
Mm-hmm. And the other part of that is that like, they act like this is an advantage for Erica. It's not, it's an advantage for every other person on the losing team. They had the best experience because they got to have the first 2 days of merge, which is vital. And they take no blame for the fact that they are now going to be immune. Erica had to sit out for 2 days. Even if she does survive this next vote, like it's going to be very difficult for her to integrate into this new merge tribe that has all kinds of new groups and plans and all sorts of stuff that she wasn't included on. Not to mention the fact that she now has six people who are like, you just made me evil. They're going to be annoyed about that. So this was not a good thing at all for Erica. This was a terrible thing for Erica. She should not want this.
Yeah. It's like the, now I'm going to really forget his name. what Heroes, Hustlers, Healers, yeah. Devin, when he was like, when he opened it up and he saw it's a fire making at 4, he's like, this is not an advantage. This is historic. This is amazing. And Eric is like, okay, like I love being part of history, but it's not good. People will be mad. We've really been going a while, but it made rating her very hard for me because it's hard to know what will the blowback be. Is she going to be safe? Is she not going to be safe? But then also, how can she ingratiate herself on such a fast scale? Missing 2 days is huge. She doesn't have any of these social bonds. She's going to come back in and find out that people were talking, that they were throwing out her name. It just is concerning for her.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Well, let's get into the ratings here. We have been going for a while. I feel like there's so much that we don't know. I was like, maybe this will be shorter. Apparently, no. Apparently, that means it's going to be longer. Or maybe we're just having a great conversation there.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get into the ratings here. We're going to rate the players from 1 to 10 based on generally a few different factors like their short-term safety, their long-term prospects, and how well they did in this particular episode as well. So this is an interesting one because nobody was voted out. Again, there's lots of things we don't know about the new dynamics of this tribe or even who's going to be vulnerable technically. So with that in mind... Let's get into them. Here are the photos if you're watching along. So I've split them this time into the groups that they're in. And I'm starting with the blue group, as I imagine that they're going to be the ones that are vulnerable. And I'm starting at the bottom of this blue group. So the person I think that is essentially in one of the most vulnerable positions and or did the worst in this episode. And for me, that person is Ricard. I have him at the bottom of the winning the blue group. And that's because, first of all, he's in a position where if his group is vulnerable, I don't like his position. I mean, you have, 3 people from Luvu, all of whom seem relatively safe. I mean, they seem to be the one driving the vote in the previous, sort of like situation. And then if we are to assume that, I guess we'll use the name for now, the camp out, that if they really are going to be, a driving force of this vote, Danny and Deshaun should be good. And they should be able to protect Sydney, as a very valuable number to them. And with that in mind, that leaves Ricard and Evie, very vulnerable. Nasir, possibly. Now, Ricard as a man might be protected by Danny and Deshaun, but I don't think he might not be protected by Shan, who might feel like, am I going to stick my neck out for this guy when there's only 6 people vulnerable? I don't know. I don't really love what he did at the end of Ua. And neither did I. I don't know, Derek X, who is a fan favorite from Big Brother 23.
Second favorite.
Second place fan favorite. Did you like what Ricard did at all?
I literally have no idea what you guys are talking about. Darren, you guys have been talking about fucking Survivor for longer than the show was even on, man. This episode is 1 hour. You've been talking about it for two. How is this possible?
I'm sorry that I'm taking, dude, I am so hungry.
I'm waiting to eat dinner. She said it was a 7 p.m. interview. I was not expecting this to go to 9.
And we're really only probably like 2/3 of the way through.
Also, we need a pack, and Shubi is here tonight, so I really want to see him. We have a lot of things that we need to do.
We'll get moving, Derek.
But what I'll say is wait, what was the question? I like record. Is that a hot thing?
No, I don't think that's a hot thing.
Oh, thank God, man. I'm so scared of saying stuff about Survivor. I just can't say anything right. But I do like record.
You have to approach it like, say, hey, I'm a casual. And then people will be like, ah, I get it.
I'm a casual. I don't know why anyone would think I'm not a casual. I've literally seen one season of Survivor. I'm the most casual person there is.
Yeah. I remember when you pretended that you had watched Survivor in the house.
Amazing strategy. I think that got me through like 3 weeks in the beginning. They were just voting out everyone who didn't have any game knowledge. And I was like, what about Survivor? Does that count?
I said, I'll give that to him. I trust him now.
Eric X on Survivor. This is how he gets when he's hungry. It gets way worse. If this interview goes to 9:30, I'm coming back.
It definitely will.
Yeah, it's
I ordered food for you.
Okay.
Can you do avocado?
Yeah.
I got so many different vegan appetizers.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Derek's going to be like, hey, Jeff, can we get tribal going already? I'm starving. I need to get back to camp.
Yeah, probably. He's like, let's come on, guys. Let's just vote each other. Oh, I know this is 25 days. Can we make it like 7? I got people to see. I have things to do.
Immediately. I love this.
All right. Well, let's get through the ratings here, so they can go hang out with Shubi.
No, really, no rush. Feel free to hang out with Shubi if you want to. But
there's no rush. You can keep her.
Okay. Okay, good to know.
You can hang it. Don't wait up for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Damn. You really stole it from me. Okay.
Sorry.
Didn't expect me to take him up on it.
I was not expecting that answer at all. I was like,
Survivor, come on. I gotta watch it. I gotta be part of it.
She'll always choose Survivor first.
Sorry.
Look, it's a very important thing, yeah.
I'm watching the season.
Yes.
All right. Well, okay. So, Ricard here, I gave him a 4. I gave him a 4. I did not love the way he handled the situation with Shan. I felt like it was unnecessary. He's now in a potentially vulnerable position. I think his only saving grace right now is the fact that he's a dude. And I don't have a lot of faith in his social ability either, considering how much he relied on Shan in his original tribe of Oa. That's where I stand here on Ricard.
Yeah, I gave him a 5. When I did this, I feel similarly. I don't feel good about him and Shan. That said, we didn't really see much of him this episode, so it's hard for me to know where he's actually at, who he's tight with. We didn't even see him talking at the merge feast, I don't think at all. But he is a guy, and so I'm assuming maybe the guys will look out for him. That said, the guys don't have the majority of the numbers, so I don't really know. We're going to see. But I'm a little bit nervous because I've really enjoyed Ricard, which I know some people haven't as much, but I've been enjoying him.
Yeah, he's definitely a very interesting character. I have enjoyed watching him. I mean, just the fact that he is like pretty much the only person that is willing to call out Shan in those moments where it's like other people are just kind of like, it's Shan. Like Ricard is like, no. I was there when you did this to somebody else. Like, I know what's going on here. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm interested. Ricard also said at some point in this episode, I'm trying to go through my notes. Sorry. I've been so thrown off now. that he has to do what's best for him. And he does just have a lot of information about Shan and how she's been playing this game, that people have felt like they're close with her and she turned on them. And also he knows all about the advantages she has. Granted, I think, Liana does too, but it is information that's in his pocket that he could potentially pull out at any time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So This is a really tricky one, I think, and with both groups. But who did you have above Ricard? Did you have Ricard at the bottom of this group?
I didn't stack rank them, which I'm now regretting. But the next person I have is actually Nasir.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Nasir also out of five. And I'm nervous for him. Partially, there are a few reasons here. I think I'm nervous for him because he has an idol. And in the event that, if the Blue Tribe becomes vulnerable, Liana is going to want to use her advantage. That is our food. Want to use this advantage and take an idol from someone. And then when that is happening, it makes sense to vote that person out. So I think that just for that reason, just because he has this advantage, he is a little bit more at risk. That said, he does seem tight with Deshaun. He does seem tight with Sydney. He does seem tight with Danny. And he even bonded with Xander. The buzzer is broken. I'm so sorry about all this chaos happening.
I'm so hungry. I don't think I can make it.
Please stop. You're not Xander coming back from the challenge. You'll be fine.
I'm on Survivor. I'm training right now.
Derek would show up on the boat first day and be like, guys, this is too much.
Yeah. Like, I think he would self-evict probably. Maybe he would enjoy, though, going out and fishing and just eating raw fish. You would see him in the background, like, eating lizards that he was seeing. We have food. We have food here. Okay. What can you do? Well, sorry.
Yeah, I actually also gave Nasir a five. Primarily because I'm just still worried for him as one of the six people vulnerable. I did say last week that he should be the one that Liana steals the idol from, and we did get some confirmation from her in this episode that she is thinking along those lines, something along those lines, which is not great. And this to me again, now Nasir is a guy, and that's good from the Danny and Deshaun point of view of these things. He's also on Luvu, which should be good for him. He's also seemingly a number for Deshaun and Danny, which should help protect him with this, camp out, which again is not the official name. And so those are all good things. However, if Liana is going to steal an idol and she's thinking of stealing Nasir's, I feel like that could be the impetus for then voting him out again. If she steals from Xander, you then vote him out because you don't want him in the game pissed off at you for having stolen his thing. But Xander is now immune. So that to me indicates that she is less likely to steal from Xander, who she couldn't then vote out, and more likely to steal from Nasir. And then again, once you steal from Nasir, you probably then just vote him out. And there's some reason to do that. He is Luvu, and you take out a Luvu number by doing it. And, as long as you feel like Danny and Deshaun are going to be still okay with you, and maybe they're less concerned about the guy girl thing, now that they have this camp out, so-called alliance, then maybe they're willing to let him go. And it's not like he's been the best number for them either. We've seen multiple times throughout the pre-merge that they've vacillated from we like Nasir to we want him out, to we can't work with him. And so I don't think there's a lot of reason for them to stand up and protect him. So I do feel like Nasir could very well be our merge boot here. And that would be pretty, pretty devastating. But I think it's very possible.
Yes, I agree with that. I think, unfortunately, I can almost see it more than Ricard, just because of how everything's lining up. Also, some things with edits, Nasir, which I don't like. I don't like Edgic. I don't like looking at all of that. But Nasir really reiterating how safe he was, how he's going to be totally fine. It does just feel like you're setting him up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I also have Evie in a very vulnerable position here. Again, Danny seems very set on keeping the men. That's not great for Evie here, in this vote. Again, with like Yasa is not very tight. Liana has been wanting to go after Xander. There's a new rift between Tiffany and Liana now. There was, you know, Tiffany was suspicious of Evie's relationship with Xander. There's not nearly as much incentive for Liana to go out of her way to protect Evie, as there might have been in the past, because it really seems like Liana has jumped all in with Shan and this new alliance. And that doesn't leave a lot of room for Evie, especially if Danny is looking for somebody who is not Mubu, and essentially not Sydney, a woman who is not Sydney, to go from this group. That has to, be, or at least not a man, that has to be Evie at that point. So that's very, very dangerous here for Evie. I don't think that Evie did anything particularly wrong in this episode, unlike Ricard. That's why I have Ricard at the lowest point in my ratings. I also gave Evie a 5, but I do not love their current position in terms of safety.
Yeah, I gave Evie a 6. Partially, I felt like Evie did well from what we saw of blending in with the other blue group when they're at their merge feast. We know that they have a relationship with Deshaun. We saw them talking with Sydney. So it seems I trust Evie's ability to make some good social bonds here and make people trust them. And so for that reason, I was a little bit higher on Evie, but for the reasons that you said, her being, you know, seen as a woman or not a man, does make her vulnerable here. And it would be easy enough to turn on them, but, we'll see. We did see them back with Tiffany and Liana in some scenes. So it seems like that three still will be sticking together, but we never saw a union. I'm interested to see what that will be next.
Yeah. Sorry, I never went to Evie's picture. I mean, I feel like you guys know the players by now. Then I have Sydney here as well. I also gave Sydney a 5. I'm very bad here with the ratings this week. It's just so there's an entirely new game essentially, and I know almost nothing about it. The only strategy we got was for the other people being vulnerable, so we didn't even get like what happens if these people are vulnerable. So for me, Sydney was a round of 5 before anyway. I gave her a 5 last week. And I feel the same way here. I feel like I think that Sydney is in a vulnerable position. If Danny and Deshaun are willing to get rid of a woman from their tribe in Erica, and maybe they orchestrated a deal where they sacrifice one person from their tribe and they want it to be a woman. The only person that fits that category now is Sydney. I think they're a lot tighter with Sydney. I think they'd be a lot more reluctant to let Sydney go, but if the whole thing was, hey, you were supposed to take out somebody from your tribe, that puts Sydney in a more vulnerable position. And even if she isn't the one to leave next week, she's still not set up super well. Her two closest allies just moved off onto a new group that they seem to probably be more loyal to. That is very not good for Sydney, as I imagine you have experience with, Clay.
Yeah, I gave Sydney a 5. I thought about giving her a 4. A lot of things this episode did not go well Sydney's way. I do think with this new formation of this alliance, that's not promising for Sydney. And we also really saw her throwing Erica's name out to Tiffany, to Evie. And I just feel like if Erica smashes it, then they will quickly run that back to her and the guys will see her. Okay, we can sacrifice this. Erica won't want to befriend her. She also was bad talking Heather and was throwing Heather's name out. So Heather will happily vote her out, I think. Granted, who knows really what Heather will do at mm-hmm. any point. So I think that we could see Sydney leaving in the next few episodes. I don't really think that she'll make that deep of a run, but I don't feel that optimistic here. She could win some comps. She could win some individual immunities. I think she is pretty physical, and that might get her a little bit further. But even then, she might be seen as a threat more so than Evie is.
Mm-hmm. So above Sydney here, I have Danny. And I've got Danny at a 7, which is still pretty consistent here for where I've had Danny for a while. I do think he's also potentially vulnerable here. I mean, I don't love him openly questioning Evie about voting out the men. I feel like that sort of like opens the door for him to be targeted as somebody that's like, hey, well, he's after the women. There are a majority of women here. And I do think he obviously also stands out as a huge challenge threat, as somebody that is now like leading a charge as the potential like leader of the biggest tribe in the game, who seems to be outspoken about who he wants to go after. That all is not great for Danny, especially if he's one of six people vulnerable. Now, I think this connection he has with the other black players in the game is that could be one of his saving graces, if not the saving grace. He may also have a connection to Yasa that, you know, through Deshaun and Evie that we don't know about. But if Evie's having to save themselves, that's maybe not as valuable as it could have been. So I do think he's potentially vulnerable, but as long as he survives this vote, he should still be in a very good spot, especially with this new alliance. He's looking very good. So I'm still sticking with the 7 overall. It's where I keep landing him here.
Yeah, I gave him a 6, but it was mainly because I was worried about him being so vocal about the All Women's Alliance. We know that that's something that Evie will just pocket probably. And she is known that, you know, she's very conscious, or they're very conscious of the men-women divide, who's getting credit. I think that especially because this episode, we really saw Danny pushing that the most. It just doesn't bode that well for him. And also, he was the one who clearly lied about why Erica was getting sent away. That might definitely rub her the wrong way, and other people might be able to see through that. They might think that he will lie or will whatever, kind of see him also as the leader who's pushing this forward. So that worries me a little bit, but he is covered with Sydney. It seems like he's good with Heather, maybe, and Deshaun. And then with Liana and Shan, that's a pretty good base to move forward with. I don't think that he'll be going next episode or in the following one, but he is so clearly the most physical. I'm pretty sure Jeff even said that this episode, that he's the biggest guy out here is climbing on top of the ball. He's digging deep.
Bring me to one of my favorite phrases. You got to dig deep.
Even then, if Jeff's calling it out that you're so physical, you're clearly the most physical person out here, and people will want to target him eventually just because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then at the top of this group, as always, I mean, this has really been a consistent spot here for me with Danny and Deshaun at the top of their blue group. But Deshaun, who I gave another 8 to, I feel like he has all of the benefits of Danny's position while being less of a threat, less prominent in the targeting of women, and seeming to have better connections with Evie, potentially with Sydney. He also has an extra vote. I've really loved what Deshaun has been doing. And with this new alliance in his arsenal, I feel like he could be very, very dangerous in this game in terms of getting to the end and potentially winning here. So. Feeling very good about Deshaun still.
Yep. I also gave him an 8. I feel like he is the one of the best positioned people right now in this game. I think that he will go very, very far because I think people will also go after Danny before that they'll go after Deshaun. It seems like he has made good inroads. He has a lot of people in a lot of the different tribes. He's pretty aware of what's happening in the game, it seems like, especially like at least knowing there are these fractures in Luvu. He's not really getting so much of the blood on his hands. We didn't see him that much this episode, but it feels like he is in a fantastic spot moving forward.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like one of the biggest things holding me back from going even higher on Deshaun at this point is that I just don't see enough from him and I don't know what his plans are at all. So it's hard to go too far above an eight. But this is the first week where I was really like, I considered it. It's just like, I just don't know enough yet to go that far. And there just wasn't enough of a presence in this episode. Let's head over to the no buff group. The losing group here, which may become the winning group eventually. We at the bottom of this group. So I, even though she's in a position to smash an hourglass here, I still had to put Erica at the bottom of this group. Now, I gave her a 4. So 4 is the lowest I gave anybody, and I gave it to Ricard, and I'm giving it to Erica as well. The fact that she was rejected from the winning group was not great. But the biggest thing for me is, again, that she was absent for 2 days. That's so much time in a game of only 26 days, right? Like that's massive. It's 2 days at the start of the new version of the game where everyone is merged. And in those 2 days, apparently, everyone agreed to vote her out. Which means she is completely absent from any plans. There's nobody in the merge tribe that's like, well, we're waiting for her to come back in so she can rejoin us. Like, this is very, very bad for Erica. Even if she does choose to break the hourglass and be safe for this one vote, there's going to be some major shakeups, and she's going to have to do a lot of work to get back into the game from where she is. So for that reason, it's got to be a 4. Here for me.
Yep. And I also gave her the 4. Partially, she's at the bottom already with Luvu, it seems like. Everyone keeps reiterating that. She feels like that. That's what we've really seen. And now she's going to make a decision here that, assuming that she smashes it, will, you know, make them even more mad at her. In these games, once your name's been said, it will just be said again. I think it's probably more true with Big Brother when fewer names are said than Survivor, when sometimes it seems like everyone's name gets said. But for 2 days, the majority of these people have been in their head, like, Erica's leaving. Erica's going. She hasn't been around camp. They can see what this game is without her. And so in the, you know, if she smashes it and she saved this vote out, it would be, again, she will continue to be a potential easy vote out where people haven't factored her into their plans moving forwards. But I really want to give her the benefit of the doubt. Also, she's getting these 2 days to really sit and really think about what is my game plan moving forward. She's getting at least, you know, 12 hours, I guess, to sit and think, okay, what are the repercussions if I smash this? Who could I work with? Who couldn't I work with? Who would I trust? Who wouldn't I trust? And she wants to start playing hard. She wants to play, you know, like a lion. And for that reason, I feel optimistic for her. We know she's pretty good at puzzles. I feel like maybe she can win some of these individual immunities. Maybe she can build bonds with people, endear herself to them. I could see some of the women taking her under their wing, but still out of 4 just because she has an uphill battle happening.
Yeah. For me, I also put Heather out of 4. And this is actually in a similar way to Deshaun, where like I can't go higher on Deshaun. I feel like I could go lower on Heather, but I just don't know enough to do that. Pretty much the only thing we get from Heather about Heather in this episode is when Sydney says she can't stand her. And she says that to a group of people who don't bat an eye. And if that's just who Heather is, even in the merged tribe, that's not great. But I still just don't, I know so little about her actual position that I can't just take it on this one tiny scene from Sydney's perspective, that she's like really in a terrible spot. So, for me, it's a four just cause it's like, it seems bad, but I who knows?
Yeah, I gave her a three. I'm looking at my notes. My only bullet point for her, I have two, is Sydney cannot stand her.
And yep, then, that was my only bullet point.
Like, she doesn't do that well in challenges. Maybe they'll keep her around because of that, but her tribe doesn't like her and no one cares. Like, what did Heather do? Like, I'm, what, I don't understand this edit really whatsoever, but I'm just gonna toss her a three. We didn't see her making that many bonds. I don't even think I really saw her ever in the background of scenes. So, I have a, if I were to guess, I would say she gets twisted out of this game in a random happenstance, but I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Who did you have above Heather here?
Above
Erica, if you had Erica above Heather.
Let's see. Okay. I have two people that are tied. Mm. I think I would then probably put Tiffany next, but I have Tiffany and Xander both at a five.
I do as well. I thought about it and, you know, it was tough because Xander doesn't have a great episode. Shan talking about wanting to take Xander's idol. Liana talking about wanting to vote Xander out. But Tiffany didn't have a great episode either with this conflict with Liana and stuff like that. So overall, I gave the edge to Tiffany. I put her, but I gave them both fives. But I just feel like, for Xander, he made some connections to some of the men on the other tribes. I think that's good. He does have an idol and an extra vote. That's good, except everybody knows about them. The fact that Liana does seem interested in stealing the idol from Nasir and not necessarily him is good. The fact that he's immune from the next vote is good. But he's still, even through all of that, he's still very vulnerable, has no real allies. And that's really rough. With Tiffany, it's like, you know, with Liana not on board with her, she could be in a very vulnerable position, but she, at least unlike Xander, seems to be aware that something needs to be done. And I feel like that puts her in a position to do some work to get to a better position, especially now that she is potentially probably safe. So that's why I leaned Tiffany there, but I gave them both five. So it's very close.
Yeah. Like I feel for Xander, when your allies are willing to turn on you, or at least one of your, someone that you think is a close ally is willing to turn on you, you are not in a good spot because it means that someone won't say like, oh, let's not do this person. Liana's willing to go to other people and say, hey, let's do Xander still. Even though she doesn't necessarily want to steal the idol from him, I feel like maybe she would if she felt like she needed it, or if she felt like maybe Shan needed it, or, you know, someone that she sees as closer to than Xander. I think that she wouldn't hesitate to take it, and she would probably relish the fact that she could take it because, you know, it's fun. And then with Tiffany, I am also a little worried about her because of her rubbing Liana a little bit the wrong way and being perceived as a threat by her. But I don't know why I trust Tiffany a little bit more to play aggressive, to know that these other relationships are happening and drive forward. And I think potentially the two of them could pair up. And if Tiffany shares the knowledge with Xander, I think that brings them both in a better spot. But I feel five about both of them.
Yeah. Well, above them, I've got here in the top two spots here, I have Liana, and I gave Liana a seven. I considered an eight here. In fact, I gave Liana an eight last week because I was very excited about her position. This week, I really did not love and this wasn't entirely her fault, but the fact that she falls out with Tiffany. One of the reasons I really liked her position last week is because she seemed to have Tiffany. And that meant that she would have Shan and a potential new merge alliance. Plus, she was in a good position with Yasa. Now it seems like she has sort of traded one group for another. And this other group is probably more powerful, probably more going to be more successful. But she may not have that backup plan, that extra power, if she doesn't have Tiffany. And if she loses Evie in this vote, which is possible, that could be very bad for her. And the fact that this advantage has been outed, and if Tiffany has told Sydney or anybody, it could make this power all but useless, because all you need to do is just, you know, let somebody else hold your idol for tribal or whatever, right? So I go too far calling it useless. It's still very powerful, but it could end up not doing anything, and it could put a big target on her back. There were a few events that occurred in this episode that I didn't think were great for Liana. I think I was projecting a very good spot for her last week, and she's mostly there, but she's not all the way there. So it's back down to a 7 for me for now.
Yeah, I gave Liana an 8 going through it. But you talking about the potential of Evie leaving, of Liana using her power incorrectly. If she uses it incorrectly and uses it on someone, I guess she would use it on Nasir, and maybe Nasir gives it to someone, that could blow up a spot for her and put her at a much worse spot. That said, I feel like she has very good relationships. I mean, we haven't seen anyone throwing out the potential of Liana's name. I think it would be more likely to turn on Tiffany than Liana, or Xander than Liana. Granted, we're seeing mainly the anti-Xander campaign coming from Liana, but she does have the idol advantage. More and more people are finding out about it. But I still just think she's in a good spot. I think that she has good allies. I think that if she gets the idol or some advantage, I think she'll be able to navigate her way through. I could see, I mean, she has more allies at this point than Shan does. And I kind of think maybe Shan will get taken out before Liana will, similar to how I feel about Deshaun and Danny. If people are tying them two together, I could see Shan going before her, but I feel like Liana still is in a fantastic spot in this game.
All right. Well, that of course leaves Shan at the end. And if I had to compare Shan and Deshaun, who are the two people I'm going to give an 8 to, I would still put Shan at the top. Now, last week I gave Shan a 10. I was very impressed with the way that she maneuvered, even though I didn't love the way she approached Ricard. This week there were a couple of things here. Obviously, the fallout from her approaching Ricard wasn't great, and did not work out super well for her. She did get the vote back, which was good. She has an extra vote. She has an idol. She should be immune in the next vote with this hourglass thing. She has this new strong alliance, but her relationship with Ricard is shaky. And outing Liana's advantage, if that was intentional, unintentional, another indication that like maybe there is some sloppiness there that could bite her at some point in the game. And also just like the general uncertainty of like, where do things go from here? She hasn't completely locked things down yet, which like she had on her tribe. And there wasn't really a lot of Shan in this episode at all. The only things we saw from her were pretty negative overall. So it's down to an 8 right now, but I do have a lot of faith in her as a player. And I honestly expect this to go back up. But for now, with this half episode, it's an 8.
Yeah, I went for it. I gave her a 9 just because I just really trust her game. I trust her strategic ability. We did see some negative moments with Ricard, her very clearly talking about struggling between emotion and logic, which I think might be foreshadowing down the line. But she does have a very tight ally with Liana. And even though she did make this slight mess up, Liana didn't hold it against her from what we saw whatsoever. It distanced her closest ally with their next closest ally. And I think that just roped Lyanna in even more with her. Rickard doesn't really have anyone else. Sure, he's a guy, so he can work with the guys. But I think Rickard will still be reliant, or not reliant, but still be working with Shan in this game. And now Shan has this, we're calling it what, the Campout Alliance of people that will have her back. And she just has so much warmth and excitement and makes people feel good about her. I think that she will make a deep run at this. That said, I worry that Shan will go out at 5. Or Shan will go out at 6. People have compared Shan to Tiffany on my season, I think since pretty early on, and I worry that it will be a very similar story to her, where at some point Shan will so clearly be the front runner, will have kind of brought this group together, she has all these advantages. At some point, I worry that Shan will just be seen as too big of a threat and will be taken out before she can make it to the very end.
It's very possible. But that's it. That's what we have for the stock watch. We rated all of the players. What a fun time, Claire.
Yeah, this has been a delight. This has been so fun. We're coming in right now under 2 hours and 30 minutes. So Derek will be so happy. But this has been good. I've really been enjoying this season. I just like Survivor. I just really enjoy it. Any Survivor is good Survivor to me. I haven't gotten into the international versions that have come out recently, but I'm also excited about those. This cast is amazing. I've been loving them. Even the people like, there's really no one that I super dislike on this cast. Normally I have a few people I can't stand. So I think it's a testament to them.
Yeah. I'm imagining when you told Derek that you were going to do this podcast, he was like, all right, the episode's only an hour. I can't imagine the podcast goes any more than like 45 minutes.
Yeah. I shouldn't even tell him about, any of the other recaps. Yeah, I mean, this took a little bit. But there's a lot of deep dive, talk about the potential, talk about scenarios. He's used to long game talks anyways. He shouldn't have been that surprised by this. he worked with Kylan so closely in the game. Right. You know.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Claire, for coming. This was so much fun.
Yes, absolutely. I'm happy to come back anytime. It's been a delight.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they want to hear your Survivor takes?
So you can find me on either Twitter or Instagram at Claire Rafus. My name's on the screen, but last name's Rehfuss. And sometimes I live tweet Survivor. I haven't done it recently, but I'll probably get back into it. I've just been watching it with friends, and so I haven't wanted to have been totally glued on my phone. And then today for this one, I was taking notes. So I didn't want to be, I couldn't be dual tasking there. Didn't want to reveal all my takes. But normally I will also post a little bit on Instagram of Derek's takes as well as mine. And we have very different opinions and takes on the season. He does not understand why someone would smash the glass. He's a loyal player. I don't know what to tell you. So there are some wild takes out there from him. But I have a cameo too, but whatever. But social medias, that's what I have.
All right. Well, there you go. Make sure you follow Claire. I saw your cameo for Derek and it was hilarious.
Oh,
I'm sure you do great cameos. Find Claire there.
Yes, I do think I do a good cameo. I have recently come into acquisition of my Duke of the Deck costume. So I will put it on. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but I will put it on if you ask, throw cards, whatever. I have about a third of my deck left.
Subjected yourself to a lot of picking up cards.
Well, it's really a plot because now people will buy it and I'll get the money anyway. So it doesn't matter. It's the theme. Yeah.
All right. Well, of course you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I'm watching these episodes live with you guys every Wednesday night. And you can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn. I did an interview with Claire about her Big Brother game. So you can find that on Rob as a podcast, on YouTube or on the, you know, wherever you get your podcast feed. Yeah, plenty of other stuff. You find me on Twitch. I'm going to be playing some more horror games, as October, rounds out here and, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. So, check it all out. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Of course, I'll be back next week with another Stockwatch episode for Survivor. We'll see where things go when we get to the second half of this episode.
Get out of Murgatory.
Yes, we'll finally get out of Murgatory. We'll see if we'll see where we end up, I guess, after Murgatory. In the good place or the bad place, who knows? But that's what we have for you. Thank you so much for joining us here today. And I will see all of you next time.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.